You're listening to the Brand Book Podcast for entrepreneurs who want to tell their brand story with ease and confidence. I'm here to help you bring the power of story to your brand so you can inspire, influence, and book more clients through a compelling brand story and conversion-friendly copywriting. I'm Kayla, your host and copywriting strategist at The Literary Co., a boutique copywriting studio for creative brands and entrepreneurs. Now, I'm helping you tell your brand story beautifully and take the online business world by storm. Are you ready? Then let's do this. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to get all the latest updates from the Brand Book Podcast. To get reminders direct to your inbox, head to theliterary.co/blog to sign up for weekly reminders. Hey there. I'm so excited for today's episode, which is all about website audits, how to do them, when you know you need to go to a professional for one, and what signs will you need to know if your website just needs a little glow up or a total brand overhaul. If you're not familiar with the term website audit, or you've just heard it a lot in passing and never gotten one before, it's basically a process you go through to examine your website and determine if it's meeting its primary goal, and if not, determine how you can make your website do so. Something I've found from years of working on websites is that there is always something to improve. Even the best websites out there have something about them that could always be better. Remember, you may have a pretty site, but that doesn't mean it's working for you and meeting your primary goal. So before you complete a website audit, you will want to establish who you're trying to reach and the top goal of your brand's website. Are you trying to get people to schedule a call, fill out your contact form, sign up for your email list? Have this goal firmly in mind when you start the process, and that will illuminate the way. Are you ready? Then let's get started on the website audit checklist. So the first step, track how users interact with your website. The first question I always ask is, are you running any sort of user metrics on your site right now? Most people will say that they're running Google Analytics, which is great. That tells you how many visitors you have, where they're coming from, and that can be social media, Google, or a direct link like from a newsletter, as well as what your bounce rate is. And even if someone's on your website right now, they have something called real-time tracking where you can click in and see whether they're on desktop or mobile, what country and state they're in, how long they spend on their site. It's very interesting. And you can also see which pages are most visited. But there's an even better way to track how your users interact with your site and where they're leaving the page. They're called heat maps. I use a tool called Hotjar, which has a completely free plan that lets you track 2,000 visitor recordings. And you can install this in the header code of each website page you'd like to track. There are move maps, scroll maps, and click maps. And I'll go into detail here about each one so you know how to track them. Move maps show you where readers are moving their cursors to. You can see which sections people are following along with their cursors. This is really cool to know which sections are really high impact. So sometimes you will have readers who are moving with their cursor over your words. And that shows you that people are really engaged with what you're saying there. Scroll maps show you how far readers scroll down the page, so you can find out what percentage make it to the end and how far your users actually make it to different content pieces. This is helpful so you can know which information needs to be moved earlier on the page and what information is lower priority and can be moved towards the bottom. For example, if your primary goal is to get your reader to contact you about working together, this would be higher on the page, whereas an email signup would be closer to the bottom since this isn't the primary user goal. We also have click maps. This shows you where your users click. You can see which call to action buttons are hot and where people are clicking on your navigation. You might find that the expected areas are hot with lots of clicks, but you may also find that your calls to action aren't where they should be to catch your users' attention, and you're missing out on getting the sale because of this. The thing with heat maps is that they're great for determining how people are using your site. The difficulty often comes when you have to determine what to do with the information and how to change your site to reflect that so you have a better user experience and have people complete the desired goal. Something you can also do is look at user recordings, and these are actual recordings of your visitors using your site. They're completely anonymous, so you can't see who they are. You can just see their location and how long that they spent on the site. You can watch those to see what a user's experience is so you know where they enter the site, where they scroll to, and even where they completed an action or even abandoned the page. This is excellent for shaping your site to be what it needs to attract your dream client. If you'd like to dig into this further, I have a freebie you can check out at theliterary.co/heatmaps for a free workbook. I've also linked it in the show notes. So after you've done heat maps, step two is take a closer look at your headlines. Do they really show who your brand is, what it does, and the clear benefits of working with you? So I get it. Headlines are hard, but they are the thing that people read the most. You may find that the serial scrollers on your site aren't reading as much of the body copy as you'd like, but you can count on the headlines factoring in for sure. You may be really tempted to sound clever in your headlines, but this isn't everything in copywriting. Being clear really can be better, and the data supports that. If people are confused and aren't quite sure what it is that you do, they're going to jump ship. If you haven't done so, this is a great time to revisit your brand's one-liner and mission statement. Although you may not want to use these as the first line people see on your website, you can definitely borrow bits and pieces and find a way to incorporate them into a headline that really grabs people. You may also consider surveying your audience and making sure you're up to date with what they need and what they're looking for from your brand so you can make sure that that headline really hits their pain points. When you're doing this, it's very easy to get overwhelmed. So start with one page at a time. Read the headlines carefully. Are they telling a story? Is the page itself telling a story? I would say that for each section, because your page, chances are, is broken up into different sections sort of visually, you want to try out several different headlines. So get out a piece of paper, get out your Google Doc, and start brainstorming. Sketch out different alternatives highlighting different benefits and see which one resonates. You can test them out by seeing how they perform on your website by tracking them through heat maps over weeks and months, and then tweak based on this. Also, if you're struggling with your homepage headline, I'm going to link to some great headline templates for you to try out in the show notes so that you know exactly what to target in that very first line that people see. The next step, step three, is to take a closer look at your calls to action. Calls to action are very important on a website. Something to remember here, it might feel repetitive to have lots of calls to action on your site. It might feel strange because it's asking for the sale, and in our industry, there's a lot of reluctance around feeling salesy. But think of it this way. People are coming to your site wanting what you have to sell. They want to be sold to, and you're simply pointing them to the desired action so they can engage with you and your work further. I guarantee that once you do this, you will see more email signups, more clients, more ideal prospects. So you're creating an experience on your website, and every reader on your site will have a different experience, and your site should be designed with that in mind. This means that while many people will start on the homepage, there are lots of other readers who will jump in on your blog, your about page, your services page, etc. So you need to have the information required to complete the desired action on each page so you don't lose readers you could have connected with. Some people will read every word and really scour your site, really soak it in, but others will skim. They might read only certain sections and they will skip right to the desired action. It truly depends, and you have to create a site that accounts for these different users. Here are some questions to ask yourself about your calls to action if you're needing a little extra help in this area. Are your calls to action between 3 to 5 words? So keeping it short increases conversions. If you make your buttons too long, data shows that users drop off. It can also be a problem if you have a really long line of text, like a sentence or something, and it looks like a button. This can be confusing for users, or if it's just there as a visual element and they can't click it, that can be very confusing as well. So keep those call to action short and to the point, and of course, make sure those links work. Are they on brand and action oriented? It often works to have an action verb in your call to action, like get started now or download the checklist. While sometimes they can be very practical and to the point, you can dress up something like contact me to yes, let's do this, or book my free call, depending on your goals. Are the calls to action prominently highlighted with a colorful button or visual element? Call out your calls to action with visual cues. This means bright buttons and prominent visual hierarchies. Your headlines should look like headlines, and your calls to action should look like just that, a call to take an action. Data shows that having a bright, prominent color on your button can be a great way to draw attention to it. So make sure that it doesn't blend in with something else around it. Make sure it's really clear. Something that I've also seen that can work really well on websites is to have an arrow next to that text, whether it's inside a button or outside of it. You can have an arrow, which is indicating that you're moving them to another page. Or if you're showing them another canvas, sort of a pop-up or pop-out on your page, you can lead the arrow down and it can pop out on that page itself. You can underline your calls to action as well, but colorful buttons are really a safe bet when you're talking conversions. Another question is your navigation clear and easy to find? If it's not being clicked, you know that users are having a hard time finding it. So you'll want to make sure that people can find the pages that they need to get to so they can complete the desired action. So step 4, make sure your service descriptions fully reflect the value of the offer. So now we're moving on to the services page. When it comes to your services page, it's super tempting to feel like you need to make it short and sweet. And that can work in some industries, but having a long scroll is not necessarily a bad thing. If you have content that runs longer but is engaging, it's not necessarily a negative to keep your reader scrolling. So your services page definitely needs to speak to your prospect in some way, pulling on those pain points, letting the prospect imagine what it would be like if they had your transformation, showing them the benefits of working with you. You'll also want to show the full value of your offerings by doing just that, packaging your offerings. Now, there's a lot of ways to show pricing on your website. My clients are always asking me what I think, and this really depends on what business you're in. I know of a lot of photographers and wedding planners who do dynamic pricing, meaning that they have ranges and starting prices, but their prospects really need to get in touch to see what a custom package would look like for their wedding day. That can work really well in that industry because often packages do need to be customized to specific weddings. However, I have other clients who, like me, have package pricing clearly listed on their websites, and pretty much that package is what you get when you reach out. So if your site is 5 pages, then that's the price for the work. Things can be taken out or added on, but that package price shows everything that's included so your prospect knows what they're getting with you. There's an argument to be made for not listing pricing and having prospects reach out. But in my experience, it's generally a good idea to give people an idea of what you're offering for what sort of price, even if it's just a range. Otherwise, you may have more people reaching out who aren't necessarily in your budget range and aren't able to work with you at this time. As far as listing out what's included, try to really hit on the high-value components of the offering. Don't obsess over smaller things you'd probably throw in as a bonus anyway. For example, in my offerings, collaboration with a client's web designer or brand designer is always included, but I don't list this as part of the package because it's not the highest value add I can give to my client. Instead, I list other things, the biggest components that really will give them the most impact when it comes to their brand messaging and their website copy, because that's what they're coming to me looking for. So when you're revisiting service descriptions, think really carefully about what bullets to include and examine the way your pricing is structured. Make sure it's clear and direct. But again, don't be afraid to take your time when speaking to the prospect before you get into the packages. Don't make your services page just a pricing menu. Your prospects can always reach out to you or even put in their email address to get something like that. And that services page can be more focused on selling the offering and showing the transformation and the benefits instead. The fifth step is to improve your SEO and user experience. Do you struggle with optimizing your site for SEO? You're not alone. Most creative business owners struggle with this element of their website. First of all, do you know which keywords you need to rank for? You'll want to try and do some keyword research. In the show notes, I've linked to another post about SEO to get you started, and we'll definitely cover this in future podcast episodes. For now, I'm going to encourage you to make sure those top keywords are where you need them to be on your page. A great rule of thumb, don't try to keyword stuff by putting them into every nook and cranny of your website. This is not a good idea. Weave them in naturally. Generally, you want to stick to one instance in your main or H1 headline, and again in your header 2 or subheader, and where it feels natural in your body copy. Much like when you're writing a blog post. Again, what's key here is to keep it natural. There's always a balance to strike between SEO and writing for people or conversions. It's super important not to abandon the second one just because you want to be found on Google. As far as user experience, you want to intuitively analyze this component on your site. If you're struggling to see it objectively, the heat maps can help you out. The key thing, your prospects need to be able to find things on your site. There shouldn't be anything that's super difficult to find. If it is, find a way to ease the struggle so more people can complete that desired action. Take a careful look. Is there text overlapping? Does the mobile site look right? Is your navigation easy to find? Do you have a contact form or easy to find email? These are some things that you'll want to look for in addition to reading through your copy and really getting a feel for it. Don't be afraid to read it out loud and see if it feels natural. Does it make sense? Does it sound stilted or awkward? Do you see cliches and feel that there's a way to better represent your brand? Brainstorm some alternatives and take your time with this. You can write on paper or type into a Google Doc, but definitely the more ideas, the better. On the other hand, if you're not reaching your ideal clients and see that even after doing this, your site really isn't working, or you're just completely frustrated with how your brand looks, feels, and sounds, it may be an indication of something more serious, a rebrand. And that's a totally different conversation, but definitely something to think about after you've done an audit and aren't sure if you're seeing those results. You may also just need a bit of a glow up. So how do you know you need a professional opinion in this case? If any of these are you, a website audit may be a good idea. You've tried writing your headlines, but you're completely stuck. You're not quite sure what your brand statement is or if it even works for your ideal clients. You're having a hard time interpreting your heat maps data. You're struggling to do SEO keyword research and implement the right words naturally. You feel like you're being too salesy or not salesy enough. You need that just perfect balance. You want to convert, but just don't quite know how. If you're not sure your website has these things, it's okay. Sometimes it's hard to be an objective judge of our own websites. At The Literary Co., we offer website audits, also known to our clients as glow-up sessions, so you can boost sales and reach your dream clients without the price tag of hiring a copywriter. It includes a one-hour call to answer your most pressing questions, a Zoom video including a full audit of 5 website pages, and actionable recommendations to improve user experience and copywriting. Plus, you'll get your top SEO keywords so you can begin optimizing your site now. If you'd like to learn more, head to theliterary.co. All right, so that's it for this podcast episode. I hope that helps you get started on a website audit all your own. Thank you so much for listening. Do you have questions about today's episode or topic suggestions? Head to theliterary.co/blog. Don't forget to click subscribe and join the email list to know when the latest episode goes live. Talk soon!